Captain's log. Current date. Unknown. Much like the satellite itself, this escape pod is the very definition of luxury. However, with my distress call still not being heeded, it is more and more likely that this will be my tomb. Johnny Dim has a full array of machines breathing for him, pumping his heart. But it's clearer and clearer that the food that's being fed intravenously is not being metabolized. I don't think he'll ever wake up. And I think that we will drift through space together forever.
Suddenly there's a swirl of light, and out of nowhere, Richard Lanius steps into the capsule. Where am I?
You are on an escape pod.
I don't know how I got here. Last minute I was on the dark side of the moon in Amigo Laboratory.
That's odd. Could you have been drawn here by my distress call?
It's possible. They touch into all sorts of wavelengths. What's wrong with your friend?
He's dead. He was exposed to some funky fresh jams from the broken satellite.
How long has he been dead?
I cannot say. At best estimation, a week. Maybe two.
You know, it may not be too late for him. One of the things I did while I was in the laboratory was steal this vial of gooey liquid. I believe it's what they keep the brains alive with while they're studying them.
I'm sorry. I appreciate what you're trying to do, but why should I trust you? You're a self-narrating space phenomenon.
Yeah, but what do you have to lose? I mean, it's just me, you, and this dead guy.
I guess you're right. Do what you must.
Okay. I pry open his mouth, which, by the way, wasn't all that easy to do. But I pour the goop down his mouth.
Zach?
Dim, you're alive!
Where are we?
We're on an escape pod. We're drifting through space currently. You were on the broken satellite, and you were killed.
It's all a blur.
I know, there's no time for that. There's something I have to ask you.
What?
You want a podcast?
Yeah, why not?
Cool. Welcome to Time and Space America. I'm Zach Nanimus.
I'm Johnny Dim.
And I'm Richard Lanius.
And you've just tuned into the Warpod, part of the Space City Nerd Network. Remember that if you like our stuff, you can always check us out on YouTube and Facebook. Facebook, of course, being a portal to all things Warlocks, Games, and Beer. And hey, several times through the show, we're probably going to mention links below. If you are checking us out on SoundCloud or iTunes, remember to find us on spacecitynerd.podbean.com or warlocksgamesandbeer.com. Find this episode of the podcast, and that's exactly where you'll see links below. Tonight, we are going to be talking about some of the new Avengers trailers to be hitting, a new movie from Star Wars that they recently started talking about, which is Star Wars Rogue One. We're going to see if anybody actually knows anything about Ex Machina. We're going to hash over the new Joker design, and then in honor of redesigns, including the Joker and Mr. Lanius being here, we are going to give our top three redesigns of all time! But first, as always, when we have a very, very, very special guest on the podcast, we always put the spotlight on them first. It's time to put the spotlight on Richard Lanius. Richard Lanius, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
We're very glad to have you. One of the reasons that we saw you out was not only because of Comic Palooza, because we understand that you're going to be here in May.
I will be at the Comic Palooza, yes, and running some of the games, talking on some of the panels about game design.
Very cool. That was my follow-up question. Like, are you just there as a spectator? You're just going to be walking around giving high fives and stuff? But no, okay, so we'll actually be able to see panels with you in it.
I will be. I think I'm in three or four different panels, various aspects of game design, basically how you network in the business, how do you design a game, how do you present a game, different things like that. And then I'll also be running some games that are just set up for people to sign up and play some of my different games, Arkham Horror, Elder Sign, Defenders of the Realm. And then I'll also have some open time that I play games because, let's face it, that's what I do. I design and play games.
Nice. So you talked about some of the titles that you'd previously done. But just in case no one's ever heard your name before, because a lot of people have played your games, but I've been playing Arkham Horror for years, But I didn't know that it was you. So give the folks at home your slate.
Okay, well, actually, I've got quite a few games. I'm sure I'll miss some, but Arkham Horror and Elder Sign are probably two of my biggest games published by Fantasy Flight. Defenders of the Realm is a big cooperative fantasy game that's published by Eagle Games, and all three of those games have a large number of expansions to go with them. Along with that, I've done games like Pirates vs. Dinosaurs, Alien Uprising came out last year, where you're crashed on an alien planet and have to hold off the aliens while you wait for the rescue ship to arrive. Let's see, I've got a number of games in the works right now, and Run, Fight, or Die, probably one of my biggest ones that just came out last year also, which is a kind of a first-player B-movie zombie shooter where everybody has their own board with zombies coming directly at them.
Oh, cool.
So, and that one's already where we've got some new expansions coming out for this year, but that one's been very popular, and it's kind of a different look. Every B-movie character you can imagine is in that movie, so that game. So I kind of do games like movies to some extent.
Do you have Badass with the improvised weapon, the improvised machine replacing one hand?
We actually do. That's actually one of the characters you can be.
Nice, very nice.
It's the Ash character where you've got a chainsaw on one hand, but... You know, it's got all the classic characters from the dumb jock to the unnoticed smart girl to the spunky mom to the hot chick with attitude. They're all in there. The obnoxious councilman. So it basically has everything in it. And the game is based upon where you're running around trying to get out of town, rescue as many people as you can. The people are worth points to you. So the better they are for you, like the cool guy who helps stop other people from doing things you don't want them to do, doesn't give you many points. But then again, you've got the obnoxious councilman. It's a dice rolling game. He takes all your dice rerolls away from you. But he's worth a lot more points. So the game is based on that. But it's a fun game.
Let me ask you this: the female characters, do they have a defect while trying to move that there's a percent chance that they will twist their ankle due to their heels? That they're running.
No. The female characters themselves are pretty strong. The females that you get sometimes, like the screaming cheerleader, every turn you automatically get two extra zombies because she won't stop screaming.
Absolutely.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Well, go ahead.
I was wondering if, you know, to balance it, because it would be sexist if there was just one problem with gender in an expansion. Would it be like all guys attract more zombies because they're brash?
No, you got. I mean, it's basically, I've taken every B movie character. Like, you got the stoner mechanic, you know.
Sure.
He basically lets you move away from zombies because he's got a motorcycle, but because he's laid back and stoned, you have to move. Basically, you get more zombies. You actually lose one of your roles again with him. So every character kind of does what they do and would do in a B movie. So it's got some humor to it, but it's a fun little game to play. And basically, you fight zombies every turn as they're coming at you, or you run away from them by moving them back on your board. If any player dies, the game ends, and basically you score the points at that time. Or if somebody escapes out of town, that would end the game. Or if you've managed to save five people, you can call the end of the game. So it's been a very successful game.
Very cool. Well, you got an impressive list of games that you've been a part of. I was really curious how you got started. Like, how can you tell the story of like how you designed your first game?
I'm like really, really old. So back in the 80s, when my wife was working night shift and we had two small children, after they would go to bed at night. And I really liked role-playing games back then, because role-playing had become pretty popular. And I really liked the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game, but, you know, you couldn't play it by yourself. So I basically said, you know, I'm going to make a game that I can play by myself. So I created the co-op game Arkham Horror predominantly just so I could play it by myself. You know, I made it so you could play it with other people, or you could play it by yourself. And that's pretty much the process. So I said I built the game. And back then, you know, we didn't have computers. We didn't have all the stuff to make stuff with. So everything was hand-typed. All the cards were hand-typed. Everything was hand-done.
Wow.
And when my friends would play the game, they all loved it. And they all kept saying, you need to send it off to Chaosium and see if they'll publish it. And you know, I didn't want to because there was no way to replace it. But finally I said, yeah, okay, I will. So I sent it to him. I didn't hear anything for a couple months.
Ooh.
And finally the president called me up, Greg Stafford, and said, you know, we don't really do board games, but we want to do your board game because I can't get my playtesters to do anything except play your board game.
Nice.
So that was the first publication of Arkham Horror way back when, and you know, I dabbled in computer games in the late 80s, early 90s. I you know, redesigned Arkham Horror, and ultimately, because it went off the market, ultimately contracted it with Fantasy Flight, who's just done a great job of working with Kevin Wilson on that game, to finalize the new version of it. And since then, you know, I've retired, so I've been able to spend about the last 5 years. I worked for AT&T for 32 years,
mm-hmm.
So I've been able to just focus on game design the last 5 to 7 years, and that's been great. I've been able to get a lot of things published. So.
And something I want to point out: we talked, and I'm talking to you, Warpod, and actually by extension, specifically Johnny Hackenslash. You heard it here first. Richard Lanius designs games to be played alone. It's not weird.
Oh, yeah. This is a topic on a actually, the last episode.
No.
Oh, it was one before that. Mm-hmm. So two episodes ago, there was a discussion about whether you can play board games by yourself and whether that was actually a... Johnny Hackenslash thought it was just a horrible idea.
He thought...
I think it's a great idea, by the way. Now, I don't believe that you should make games that just get played by yourself.
Right.
I mean, I think that's okay if you do, but I think to design a game and make it to where you can play it by yourself also is just a huge plus for it.
Now, that's very true, and that's actually why I wanted to ask you about Arkham Horror, because you know, it's no secret to the fans of the show that I've had a checkered past with that game, and I'm going to say that. Immediately follow that with I absolutely love Elder Sign.
Thank you.
And I've only played it once, and I'm absolutely obsessed.
Have you played the new version of Elder Sign, Gates of Arkham?
I think that's what we played.
Gates of Arkham. I don't think it had a subtitle.
Gates of Arkham is the new expansion, and what it does is it gets you out of the museum and into Arkham.
Oh no, okay. We haven't.
We had not played that.
And now every location they come out face down. It's a location. Each back of the card gives you something you can do there at that location. Then you flip it over and have an encounter there after that. So that's been extremely popular. That came out about 2 months ago, I think.
Oh, yeah, we did. We played, I think we played the original.
Just the base, yeah.
Yeah, you played the original where you're in the museum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To finish what I was saying, my checkered past associated with Arkham Horror is that the people that I play with are always... by far more experienced with the game than I am, so they wind up knowing the perfect stratagem and they tell me, well, you can do whatever you want, but this is the right thing to do.
Right, and I had the exact same experience because I played with the same group, and you get coached through the whole thing if that's the case.
Now, I can tell you what, there is no perfect stratagem, and if they're winning by sealing the gates, then that's a sissy win, so that doesn't count in my book.
There you go.
I'm just saying that if you're just sealing the gates to win, that's kind of a sissy win. Shut them all down if you really want to show me what you can do.
There you go.
You know what? That sounds like a personal challenge that we'll have to deal with on the battle map.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, my opinion is, and whether you're looking at Arkham Horror or whether you're looking at Defenders of the Realm, neither one of those games are really games built for... where one person can tell everybody what to do. That's more of a puzzle game. You know,
sure.
Pandemic, for example, very popular game, very successful game, brilliant design, but it's a puzzle, and it's one that really does lend itself to one player that knows it very well telling everybody what to do, but you really don't know what's going to happen every place you go in Arkham Horror. That's also true in Defenders of the Realm. There's more than one option. There's more than one way to get it done. Sure, if you go and have a lot of encounters in Arkham Horror, you may be limiting your ability to win. But then again, you're also limiting your ability to build the story, because building the story is the whole thing, in my opinion. Win or loss, it's the story that comes out of the game.
Right. So, yeah, I had a request. A friend of ours who actually brought the game over for us to play, he brought Elder Sign over so we could play it.
Edge of Blade, what?
Yeah, he actually requested that I ask you, how you felt about people describing your game as Cthulhu Yahtzee.
Well, I think, you know, look, people describe things different ways. You know,
yeah, yeah.
If they want to describe it that way, they can. I mean, it really has very little to do with Yahtzee.
Right. It's far more complicated, for sure.
I mean, you know, okay, it rolls. I mean, if you want to say it's Yahtzee because you roll dice, that's fine. But, you know, you're completing tasks. And really, if you want to really enjoy Elder Sign, you've got to get into it to where, you know, you talk about you don't say, well, I rolled skulls, okay? That's
right.
It was a perilous. I investigated. It's peril. There was terror. There was this. There was that. And if you play the game that way, it has a lot different feeling than oh, I just need three skulls here.
Okay? Right. Absolutely. You know, I personally thought it was not the best description, but I think if you're describing to somebody and you only have 5 seconds to do so, sure. But otherwise, there's a lot more to the game than just that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, and you know, and from my perspective, I mean, I'm happy if anybody's playing my game. So great, go play the game and have fun.
There you
I
go.
Get notes for all the time from people who love my games. I get notes from people who hate my games. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I can remember the first year that Arkham Horror came out from Fantasy Flight. I think there were 80 reviews on Board Game Geek, and 40 of them were positive and 40 of them were negative. And I thought that kind of sums it up. People love it. People hate it. But no matter what you think about it, it's going on 10 years being one of the most popular games in the market.
So it's kind of, it's a little, this might be a dated reference, but it's sort of like the Paris Hilton of video games, or maybe the Madonna of video games. It's a perennial favorite, but you either love it or hate it.
Yeah, I guess you could make that comparison. There's no doubt that that's how people feel about it, you know. But it's like anything else, to be honest with you. Most games, whether they're good, whether they're bad or whatever, if you play them with the right people, you can have a really good time.
That's key, actually. I talk about that a lot, especially when you're playing like tabletop RPGs.
Real quick, we were talking about friends of ours who aren't on the show today, who had something to say to you. Someone who is now rebranding herself, Jay Riz, will now be known as Captain Jay. You heard it here first on the podcast. But she wanted to let you know that after playing Elder Sign for the first time, she went and got the digital version. And like immediately. And she wanted to say that she loves your game and she wants to be friends with it, like maybe more than friends.
Well, that always sounds good. Hey, look, a lot of people love the Omens. They did a great job of transitioning it over to electronic version. It's much, much more difficult than the board version. But what's really nice for the people who like the board version is, you know, we waited almost 2 years before we came out with the first expansion for it, which introduced the Blessed and Cursed Die and some more encounters. We just now, it's almost been 9 months since we came out with the Gates of Arkham. But, you know, there's more stuff going to be coming out for it in the future. You know, Fantasy Flight never really gives me exactly what their plans are, but I've designed a lot of different stuff for it. And that game's going to continue to grow and provide a lot of different variety for people. And so those who love that game, I think they're going to see a lot of neat stuff over the next year or two.
Very cool.
Really looking forward to it. Before we move on, real quick, tell us, everybody does Fantasy Flight. If you're looking for Richard Lania specific stuff, where do you go online?
Oh, really? You can go to, Cool Stuff Inc. carries it. Miniature Market carries all my games. You know, you can find a lot of my stuff inside of even Barnes & Noble, but online, those are the two places I would say that you can find most often. Most game store, almost every game store always has all my designs.
Okay, and of course, everything that we just mentioned, if you are checking us out on SoundCloud or iTunes, find us on the websites that we mentioned beforehand, and you will find links below.
Right, and he will be, of course, at Comicpalooza, which you mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
I want to segue into Comicpalooza a little bit because we actually recorded our last episode before I had the opportunity to – I was supposed to have this big release and announcement about our Comicpalooza presence.
Contractually obligated.
We kind of are. So we're kind of an official Comicpalooza podcast right now. There's a few of us out there. And so I just wanted to touch on a couple points. We will be there. We will be recording a live episode on the floor at Comicpalooza. And also, we have a contest right now. We're giving away tickets.
What kind of tickets, Johnny?
A 4-pack of tickets for the it's a 4-day pass because Comic Palooza is 4 days.
What?
Yeah. So to get those, you actually have to go to our Facebook page. We have a little post there, and you know, like the post, share it, and then like our page. Do those three things, and you'll be entered for a chance to win those 4-pack of tickets.
Okay. If they don't want to listen to that part of the podcast over and over again, is there a description beneath this podcast on podbean.com and
World? There will be a link. Yeah, absolutely.
A link?
Yeah.
To the past?
Nope.
Na 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 na. I stroke your beard because it is fluffy times. All right.
Thanks, Zach. One more thing. Also, there will also be a link to the. I put up a little blog post on our website just explaining kind of our experience with Comic Blues in the past and why we're excited about it and what we're looking forward to. So yeah, there's a lot. You know, they just announced GWAR.
No.
Yeah. GWAR will be there.
Actually, that's a good one for Richard. Richard, growing up, were you a fan of GWAR?
What's that?
Were you a fan of GWAR? Because like you mentioned that you were releasing games in the 80s and they were like mid 90s.
I did several games with Interstell in the late 80s. Games like Starfleet 1, Starfleet 2, Star Legions, Scavengers of the Mutant World, that type of stuff back in the 80s.
Right.
Just keep my hand in design.
But when GWAR came out,
GWAR is a band. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Not familiar.
Okay, that's not surprising at all.
You love them. They're a horror band. Like, just gallons of fake blood are shot over audiences when they do their shows.
True.
And there you go. That would come in handy, wouldn't it?
You may be familiar with one of their more popular songs, Ragnar Rock and Roll.
Yes.
Yeah, that's GWAR.
Oh,
okay,
boy.
So one of the things that I want to talk about today, and I want to talk about this first because honestly I think that the discussion is going to go nowhere.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Does anybody know anything about Ex Machina?
I watched the trailer.
How about you, Rick?
Not me.
Not you? I watched half of a trailer.
You couldn't get through the whole thing?
No, I couldn't get through the whole thing.
that obviously makes it a good topic for discussion, doesn't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're all very experienced in this topic. Let's just, yeah.
Okay, what did you take away? Well, the thing is, like, everybody's talking about Ex Machina because it's going to be the next iRobot, but they're going to get it right this time. I don't know. What sense of anything did you get from the trailer?
Me, I actually am interested in the movie. So to sum up the trailer real quick for everybody, Richard and audience members included that have not seen it, is. Basically, this guy, you get the sense that he's going to his bosses.
This guy, a.k.a. Apocalypse.
What the hell?
He's playing Apocalypse in the next X-Men
movie. Oh, okay. So this guy is being taken to the CEO or the president of his company. He's going to his estate, which is supposed to be for this huge estate. And it's a little private. For whatever reason, he's going to this little house that he lives at. And you find out that the guy has been building an AI unit there. And there's supposed to be some sexual undertones or something with the robot. There's some deception. You don't know who's deceiving the guy that's there, whether it's the owner.
She's got a robo yarmulke.
Yeah.
She does.
This sounds like Caprica.
A little bit. But this is supposed to be like one of the little quotes from one of the critics was supposed to be like, it's like this generation's Frankenstein.
Oh.
So you're not sure if the bad guy is the president of the company that's built the machine or the machine itself. And you have this third party, the Hobbit, if you will.
Apocalypse.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So it looked intriguing to me. It's got one of those, like, it's definitely gonna be some type of twist ending, which I like. I'm a fanatic for those. Side note, M. Night Shyamalan is coming out with a new movie. So I just want to throw that in there. We can talk about that next episode.
Is it going to be the clouds killing us this time?
No, not this time. It's a pair of grandparents.
Oh, that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be into that.
Yeah.
Johnny Dem, you get the award for extenuating circumstances. That topic was four times as long as I thought it would be.
All right. Well, we can talk more about that when the movie comes out. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay. Star Wars Rogue One.
Yes.
When I first heard about Star Wars Rogue One, I assumed that it was going to be a game. And then I was researching it earlier today, and I saw just the bawdiest fan trailer.
Yeah.
That was like, it's like things clipped in from The Force Rises, but it's using Captain Mal's speech.
Right.
From Serenity, and then I was like, okay, so this isn't a thing, and then turns out that it's a movie they haven't started production on. Rick, what have you heard about this?
I'm not hearing anything about this one.
Oh, okay. So, apparently they want to, what Star Wars Rogue One is going to be is they want to make a movie outside of the normal episodes. So this isn't going to be Star Wars episode whatever.
This isn't part of the next movie. This is totally separate.
Right. Yeah. And it's coming out 1 year after the movie.
Really?
And they're alternating. So they're gonna do episode 7, Rogue One, and then they're gonna do another episode 8, and then they're gonna do another one of these movies.
Rogue Two,
I guess.
Episode Rogue Two.
Yeah.
So do you think they're doing this because of Guardians of the Galaxy and they're afraid that's gonna eat their lunch?
You know, I hadn't thought about it. Like, is that slated for 2016?
No, I think it's 17. I think, but either way, it's in development. It's a big deal.
Actually, I was thinking about the Marvel thing because I think that, like, the Marvel movie universe has been so successful that I think other big movie franchises are like desperate to get the same kind of dynasty. But they're trying to do it too quick. It's like, oh, the new Star Wars. Oh, and another Star Wars. That's different from the other Star Wars. And the expanded Star Wars.
Yeah, then you have DC trying to do the same thing, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to mush all those superheroes and rush out a Justice League movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem with DC is, and this just may be my opinion, is they just don't seem to be able to get it right.
Yeah, they've definitely had some failure.
Okay, how did you feel about Man of Steel, Rick?
Okay, I have to tell you, I didn't even bother going to see it. When I heard that he was upset about breaking the guy's neck, I was like, okay, I can get it. This the S stands for peace or whatever. You know, give me a break.
Yeah.
Well, okay. The thing is, and I've said this many times before, the movie climate as it is right now, you have to have at least pseudo-realistic reason for a superhero icon to exist. For him to just say, oh, I'm Superman, so I put a big S on my chest, it feels campy to me.
Well, that was the original reason.
But I don't think it's as campy as what he gave, this social correctness answer. Kind of. Look, I'm a huge comic book fan. And you know, I just finished watching, for example, the Daredevil on Netflix. Got it right all the way through.
Oh, absolutely.
But I just saw the trailer for Superman versus Batman. I got to tell you, totally unimpressed.
Huh.
Totally unimpressed.
Does that have to do with the? Let me restate and ask you this question. What is your idea of Superman?
Okay. Well, first of all, you know, oddly enough, when I was in college, I actually took a summer class on comic book literature because I thought it was going to be a nice, easy slough off class. You know. And it turned out it was this really deep class, you know, where you got down into, you know, all of the writing, the meaning behind the writing and all this stuff. And we had three sections where we had to read something like, 120 Superman comics. Superman, Jimmy Olsen's best friend, and all these different ones. Dracula we had to read, all these different ones. But look, I mean, to me, Superman is the one guy who always has to stand for everything right, okay? Doesn't matter how corny that gets, that's kind of where he is. That's his wheelhouse. And when you take him and you turn him into a bad guy, I think you've totally messed up, regardless of what's popular on you know, TV, on the cinema or anything else. I think you got to stay true to his character. I look back at the early Superman movies with Christopher Reeve. Man, he got it right all the way through.
Because he's a paragon. He exists specifically to be all that is right and just and is incorruptible in this pursuit.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I totally get that. And I've wished to see a little bit more of it, and I think they've been doing it right with Captain America.
You think, oh, absolutely. I mean, all the Captain, really, all of the Marvel stuff, they've nailed pretty much right on. You know, and well, not all the Spider-Man pieces, but a lot of the Spider-Man stuff, I think they've done well. But
yeah,
definitely, you know, even with the exception of the third X-Men movie, all the X-Men stuff's been pretty strong. The Wolverine stuff, a little hokey in places. But definitely, when you look at what they've done with Captain America, Captain America Winter Soldier, Iron Man up to the last one where we had all these suits flying.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
That was a little cheesy.
That totally didn't work for me. But, you know, but the whole way they built the Avengers, I thought the two Thor movies were fantastic because they were true to who he is, okay, and how that comes about. So, you know, and that's why I was so pleased to see him give, you know, I've always been a huge fan of Daredevils. Obviously, if you see my stuff online, it's Captain America I always use as an avatar. But, you know, Daredevil I've always loved because he's that second stringer. But they've given him some great villains, and they put him in some great situations. And to see him get the treatment he got on Netflix, I think is wonderful. But then I watch DC, and I see him, you know, Arrow, okay, in places, but it gets a little hokey at times. The Flash, I think they've done a good job, especially for their audience on.
I haven't seen The Flash, but as I understand it, and what makes sense based on what you've said about what you like about the transition from the comic book to cinema, is that Flash is just full indulgent comic book fantasy. Like, it's structured, bad supervillain, good Flash, faster than light star punch, wins the day.
Right, and they put a little intrigue in there, but they kept the intrigue at a level that my 10-year-old grandson, he's totally at home with, and that's exactly where it ought to be.
Yeah, yeah. From what I've seen of the Flash, I haven't seen a lot of it, but what I've seen of the new Flash, it's a very entertaining show, and I like they actually delve into the science a lot of what he does. It's not like just, oh, it's just the Flash. He's got a team that helps him, and they can measure certain things, and they can come up with little strategies, and it's kind of interesting.
Did they talk about the burger quotient?
I don't remember that. No,
Flash has.
They haven't, but you know, I tell you what. They had a good – I mean, really, the Flash in the 90s was pretty strong, and they've just done so much better job even here. But, you know, the thing about comics is – and I heard Stan Lee say this one time, and I've watched it time and time again. You see it in the movies. It's not their superpowers. It's their humanity that make them, you know,
right,
interesting. And that's where so often DC falls short for me. So.
Well, I'd like to bring something up what I find interesting because I feel a little bit differently about Superman. I'm not a huge comic book guy, but I am definitely a big fanboy of Batman, and I'm a fan with what they've done recently with the Nolan films and all that. And I like the dark atmosphere. For some reason that connects with me. Now, what I find interesting is I actually do like the direction they're going with Superman personally. Which is interesting to me because I feel like the old Superman is boring. That's just me personally, I kind of like the direction they're going. But I'm realizing now that I can't always have it both ways because they're changing the new Jared Leto Joker.
Mm-hmm.
They're morphing that into something that they feel is going to connect with more people. But I don't like it. I definitely. I don't know if you have you seen this new image that surfaced, Richard?
I have. You know, and let me say this about. You know, I liked the first two Nolan films.
Yeah.
They were based on the Frank Miller Batman Returns and very strong. The third one, I thought they totally messed that up. I don't want a Batman who's broken and bearded and got to come back. I want him to be active and interacting with Catwoman, you know, on the rooftops, okay?
Not, sure, sure, sure.
Not I'll get a plane and dump a bomb out in the ocean, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. As far as action is concerned,
the story. I think the story was just not where I wanted to be.
But actually,
you said you know, interacting with Catwoman, and my mind went to a very different type of movie.
Well, I tell you what, apparently that happens because there's one of the Birds of Prey, supposedly their daughter. So hey.
There you go.
Did you follow that show? God, it was right around the turn of the century. It was Birds of Prey, and it was specifically.
I looked at it. I didn't follow it closely. I just looked at it. I mean, it had some interesting things to it. So
I have the DVDs. I haven't watched it yet. Shoot, I lost my train of thought. I was going to say something.
You said, well, we were talking about Jared Leto because the Joker redesign is one of our toppers.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
you said you didn't like it.
I do not like it.
Can you expand on that?
The tattoos are ridiculous. It's not Joker. The one that really, it's not.
But it's Prison Joker.
He didn't have those tattoos.
One of the assumptions is that the Suicide Squad, and for those of you at home who may not be aware, Jared Leto.
Yeah.
He's going to be on a new vehicle called the Suicide Squad. Is that a show or a movie?
I believe it's going to be a movie.
Okay. And
I think it's going to be a movie too, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, I kept getting my facts mixed up on that.
And the premise is that some of the most heinous supervillains from the DC universe are being conscripted to go do impossible daring do's in an attempt to get lighter sentences. Like, the idea is we take the baddest of the bad and put them up against something, and maybe they'll be marginally successful before being obliterated by Darkseid or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe they will have a chance to do some good.
You know, that may turn out to be good. I don't know, but everything goes so dark there. And I go back and mention that Superman's not that interesting. You know, Superman actually is very interesting if you give him a villain besides a bald-headed guy.
Okay. There you go. Okay.
I mean, he has 70 years of villains. Give him Bizarro Superman. Put him in situations that he does the Captain America thing, because he is the Captain America of the DC universe, okay? He's out of place.
Yeah.
He's got this moral code that doesn't work in our society.
Yep.
And so play to that, but they actually just dropped that altogether.
Did you follow All-Star Superman?
No, I didn't see that.
All-Star Superman was interesting because the premise was exactly that. That Superman doesn't fit in.
Now, what was this? Is this a comic, a cartoon, or what?
It was a comic, a graphic novel. There was two in the series, I believe, and then it was condensed into a straight to DVD.
Okay.
Basically, what the premise was that Superman, and they were using Silver Age Superman, so you know, ridiculous.
Right.
Just super intelligent, super strong, everything. Everything's going for him. Crypto makes an appearance. And then there is this coalition of superheroes who are willing to kill, and they're all edgier. And as a result, they're getting better PR, and they're actually like killing people. And Superman eventually takes exception to it. It comes to a head. And it's basically saying Superman can't deal with this problem without losing what Superman is. And then by the end of it, he does manage to deal with it, but it's only because he's Silver Age Superman and has robots.
Yeah. But I think you can do that. I think you can do it with an edgy story. I mean, I look at some of the stuff, you know, Justice League type stuff. I think it was Death in the Family where one of their wives gets killed.
Oh yeah,
and Green Arrow and some of them, Flash and them, go hunt down and kill the person.
Yeah,
and you know, Superman and Batman don't know, but at the end of it, Green Arrow's saying to them, or the Lantern's saying to them, sure they know. They're just choosing not to see what we're doing because they don't approve of it. You know, you can be. I think they can be edgy with their characters. I just haven't seen it in their movies.
Yeah, one thing that I finished pretty recently was all of the first. Crisis on Infinite Earths, uh-huh. the one from 85.
That's very good. I do that movie.
Yeah, well, there you go.
One interesting thing about it is that Superman is killing people left and right in that.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They're shadow beings, so they're kind of like this faceless, oh, I can kill, that's not a person. But yeah, like, he talks specifically about, we have to kill him. He literally says that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a weird dichotomy for me because I don't know. To me, you don't have to be non-lethal to have the moral high ground. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
I agree. But you know, I think Marvel may be heading a misstep in the same direction with the new Fantastic Four. I don't know yet. I haven't seen it. I don't think anybody has. But everything I've read about it, where they're going to make their powers painful to them, so they're in pain all the time if they use their powers.
I hadn't heard anything about that.
Yeah, they're going to do it. It's going to be really dark because they don't think at, you know, whatever 200 or 300 million that the Fantastic Four got, that was made enough money. So they're going to do them edgier. Now, that may be good. I don't know. But,
well, I can tell you this much. If our YouTube channel is anything to go by, I don't know that this movie is going to make the same draw, because Johnny Depp put out just a quick reaction to the Batman Superman trailer and got 200 hits overnight, which is big for us.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
By the way, Warpod, 600 of you tune in every week. Check out our stuff on YouTube. You're gonna like it, and we'd love to have you. But then I did a Fantastic Four reaction.
Yeah, yeah, not nearly as many, which was a little... Your video is definitely better than mine, too, I thought. More entertaining.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I like looking at your
sleepy drunkenness?
Your Mennonite beard.
Yeah. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, that's right, we forgot. You haven't actually seen any of us except for him in his...
John's got the Viking beard going.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So there's a segment that we do on the show quite often, and lots of people are intimidated by it. I don't think that's going to be a problem for you, but we like to do something called the top three, where we take an idea, just any concept, and we give our top three of all time in that vein, like top three superpowers, top three this, top three that. And this week, in honor of Richard Leto's redesign of the Joker, and also your redesign of Arkham Horror, we're going to do the top three redesigns of all time. Top three.
Sounds good.
Now, as Johnny mentioned before, we got the agenda to you way too late. But guests on the Warpod always go first. So if
Well, I think in light of the fact that we did get it to him too late, maybe me and you go first. That way he has time to think about his list.
Whatever you want, Rick.
All right, give me a minute. Let's hear one of your lists first.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go. Number three, my least favorite of the three that I love so dearly, is Mega Man X. Hardcore Mega Man fans are going to say it's not a redesign, it's a different character. It was just the next Mega Man game. That's what it was. And just Mega Man X really took it to the nth degree with that. Just with the Shogun points on his helmet, and eventually he gets the rocket boosters, and he can fly, and he can jump, and he gets to dash when he jumps, and just everything about that game is cooler. The fact that he has more than a three-frame walk cycle is very satisfying. I love everything about that version of Mega Man, and when I think Mega Man, I think that version, because when I think Mega Man, I think technology.
Sure.
And that's what really drives that point home for me.
Okay.
Nothing to say, Dim?
Not really. I'm not a Mega Man fan.
Nothing to say, Rick.
Now, I will say this. From the little I've experienced in Mega Man, from what you've said, seems true.
Mm-hmm.
The older Mega Mans are much different. They're much more simple. And the additions and the modifications made to Mega Man X, I feel like were better.
You know, the game, I wouldn't say they're less. I wouldn't say they're simpler in the olden days.
Okay.
I would say that. I would say that their complexity makes them a little clunkier. Like you have things like in the older Mega Mans, like the Rush Coil, which is an ability that you use that summons your dog, and then you have to jump on the back of your dog, and that spring loads you up to something else.
Right.
Yeah. It's a little clunky. I would say that Mega Man X is streamlined and as a result, fun. Number two. Robin from the Teen Titans 90s TV show.
Okay. Wait. Teen Titans TV show in the 90s?
Wait, was that past the turn of century?
Yeah, that was after 2000.
Okay, well, my mistake. The Teen Titans, that one.
Yeah, I think that was like 2004, 2005, at least.
Yeah, Robin from that iteration of Teen Titans spoke to me for two reasons. One, the practicality of the external safety toe.
Yeah.
That he had on his boots. Not only did it just look badass, having this dome of steel over the part of the boot where it generally meets the faces of the things that he's trying to kill, but also no underoos.
Yeah.
They just put him in green pants.
Yeah.
He didn't need black. It's actually right now. It's essentially a red leotard.
Yeah.
And he's wearing red. He's wearing red legs underneath. He's wearing blue. Black green. Legs underneath.
Oh, black. Okay.
Yeah, black, and he looked best in pants.
That's definitely a good call.
Yeah. And finally, this is my baby.
Okay.
And it's probably stupid by today's standards, but the Metal Gear Ray.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Metal Gear.
I don't either.
Hideo Kojima, before he started doing all of his cool Silent Hill stuff, he worked on a series. He's still working on a series, although he may be on his way out. Called Metal Gear, which evolved to Metal Gear Solid.
Right.
And Metal Gear Solid was really the one that put it on the map, in a lot of people's opinion. And that's where they had the Metal Gear Rex. The Metal Gear Rex was an all-terrain vehicle that walked around like a chicken walker, but it could launch nukes and like it had plasma.
Oh, it's the big mech thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. In Metal Gear Solid 2. Rex was an army project.
Okay.
In Metal Gear Solid 2, the Navy took over the Metal Gear project, and they created the Metal Gear Ray.
Okay.
And this was an amphibious device. It had like a long tail that it could smash things with.
Yeah. So it's a redesign of the old.
Well, the thing is like it had arms, and both arms had like Vulcan cannons on it. Its plasma cutter was in its beak.
Was that Metal Gear 3 or 4?
Metal Gear Solid 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, like, the thing screamed at you. It was like a mech kaiju
They
sinked billions of extra dollars into to make intimidating for absolutely no reason. And you have to love government waste when it creates monster movies.
Yeah.
That's always been my platform.
Yes, absolutely.
I've said it hundreds of times on the show.
Right. You want me to do my list next?
Sure.
All right. Okay. Well, a quick honorable mention.
Right. One thing about these lists, if you disagree with us or have a comment about it, like these aren't stat, like we encourage it. We always mess with each other on these. Rick?
So you're saying if I disagree, just disagree, right?
Yeah. Just tell us we're outright wrong.
I'm good. I'm getting ready for the next one here though.
Excellent. All right. Okay. So first an honorable mention real quick. The redesign of the movie, The Jungle Book. I grew up
That's a reach for you to come up with honorable mention for that
movie. I actually liked the live action they ended up making. I thought that was a cool redesign. I actually really enjoyed that movie.
I barely remember it.
I watched it a bunch when I was a kid. Okay, that was an honorable mention. All right. Wilson Fisk is actually my number three for the new Daredevil. I thought what they did with it and what they created was a very intimidating, without being like overly aggressive, like he's cool, calm, and collected most of the time, and how confident he is and how sure he is that what he's doing, his mission and what he's doing and the way he says things is really intimidating, and I think I like it, and from what I remember of the Daredevil comic, I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I remember him being more of just a stereotypical bad guy, like he was just a boss.
Well, that, you're right if you look back into the 90s and the 2000s.
Exactly, yeah.
This guy is right out of the modern comic.
Okay.
Which is great because they did, as you're saying, recreate him. I don't know if they recreated him as much as they made him depth, okay? He's not just a bad guy. There's more to him than that.
Right, and I like that. I like the baggage that he has. I like his history, his past.
I agree. I think that. And by the way, I just think they did a superior job of bringing that across.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now I'm glad that I know your opinion because now I know I'm going to get tag teamed on this. okay. From a strictly from a visual standpoint.
Right.
When I just finished his Steps Out of the Shadows episode.
Okay.
If he was going to be put in a lighter suit, there was absolutely 100% no reason to not put him in a white suit with a purple shirt. That was an oversight.
I've been waiting for it the entire time. Yeah, I see where
you're not going to get that to the whole thing. I'll just go ahead and run that for you right now.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that there are scenes that are frames right out of the comic book.
Okay, cool. Yeah. See, that's one oversight on our part is that we don't get exposed to a lot of comic books. And when I say comic books, I mean comic books. We love these characters. We love the movie. We love the media. We love the multimedia, the cartoons, the games.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're both still studying, so you know, there's a lot of stuff that our money goes to that we just can't.
Yeah, yeah. Every once in a while, I like to go in, especially like places like Comic Palooza. Go and especially on the last day, everybody's cutting prices. Mm-hmm. I love to buy like the graphic novels, the thick or the collections of the you know what I'm saying, of an entire story arc.
Yeah.
I don't like to buy the individual books. I just don't have time for that.
It's frustrating.
Yeah. Anyway, so number two for me is actually going to be modern cinema. I like the evolution of cinema. I absolutely hate movies from the 80s. I think they're awful.
Even in they general. Live?
In general.
I disagree with you.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. And I'm not going to say just the 80s. It's more, I think.
All right,
let me
ask you a question. Have you seen Adventures of Babysitting?
I don't think I've seen that particular movie, no.
Go watch it.
I will. Granted, I do have a list. I do keep a list of movies that I need to, that people tell me I need to go see. So that one will make the list.
By the way, that is not an Academy Award winning movie. It's just a fun movie to go watch.
But your boy Wilson Fisk is in it. What?
Is it? Is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Oh. He oddly enough, in that movie, he plays Thor.
Really?
Yeah, that movie gets involved.
Interesting. Now, there are some exceptions.
He has long hair in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just a quick, my wife says I bring this up too much. I don't think I do. But I was in a movie. It was in the very early 90s, so it was almost in the 80s. But there are certain movies that I don't like. Like, I feel like in the 80s.
Tell him what you were in.
I was
so
in a movie.
You don't like any movie you were in? Is that what you
said? Yeah. It's a bad memory. So anything, it's guilty by association.
You tell Richard Lanius what.
I was in it. Okay, I was in a movie called My Boyfriend's Back. And I was an extra, and it was a movie about a guy who has this crush on a girl, dies, and then somehow comes back to life as a zombie.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah, but in that movie,
what part did you play?
At the very beginning of the movie, there's a flashback scene where the boy and the girl, it's them as kids, and it's at her birthday party, and I run behind her as part of a scene where she's like blowing out her candles or something. Yeah, so now we got that out there. Everyone knows about that. but there's a trend. Certain things I didn't like about the 80s, and that I never liked when actors characters looked at a camera and directed and actually talked to the audience. I always thought that
like
was
Ferris Bueller. You didn't like
yeah,
Ferris Bueller.
I hated that. I don't like that tactic. I really don't.
Can you believe this guy?
You know, everybody has their pet peeves, I guess.
Yeah, for me, it's because movies. When I go to see a movie, I like to get immersed in it, and I like to really feel like I'm there, and that kind of takes that out of me. Like, it's the same reason that Deadpool is not fun for me, because I don't like that he breaks down that fourth wall. I don't like it at all.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Zach. I'm really sorry.
That, hold on. Maybe the best thing, possibly the best thing about Deadpool is your hurdle?
Yeah.
You never told me that.
I have not. I think I probably kept that in on purpose.
Well, we're just going to let that go.
Yeah. But before this gets any worse, I'm going to go to my next one. Okay. Risk. The game of Risk. The original game of Risk, I think the rules are absolutely ridiculous, and they're stupid, and they're very merciless.
You know, Richard wrote that, right?
No, he did not. that came out a long time ago. But anyway, I played the original not that long ago. I think it was a couple Christmases ago at my my wife's family in California. We were over there for a little while, and they wanted to play Risk really bad. And they played by these rules. I was like, what are you guys doing? This is so weird. But apparently what they had done is they actually re-released the original Risk.
There's a number of Risks out now. And to be honest with you, some of the best ones that exist are the Star Wars trilogy one and Lord of the Rings. Those two are fantastic.
Oh. You do not have to tell me about this at all. I have the Lord of the Rings one. I've played the Lord of the Rings version of Risk more than I've played any other version. Yeah. I love that version.
The Star Wars one's very good. And actually, the Doctor Who one's not too bad.
Oh, really?
I didn't know there was one.
Yeah.
Everybody's a Dalek, and Doctor Who moves to different places with his TARDIS, and you can't fight where he's at, and he regenerates through the course of the game.
Nice.
So the game has a random ending based upon when he generates to the 12th Doctor.
Oh, wow. I think Zach just got really excited.
That sounds super cool.
I'm actually really excited about the Star Wars one. I didn't know that one existed. I need to go find that one. I'd also like to recommend to you, if you haven't played it, the Walking Dead version of Risk.
The Walking Dead's very good.
I like that one.
I don't like it.
It for me, it encapsulates that world very well because you feel like you are just trying to survive. It's not really about conquering the board. That's what I really like about it.
The key issue with Risk is that in all these themes, you know, I can point to better board games that use the same theme, but if you're going to play Risk, those are the risks that I would prefer to play.
Yeah.
My issue with the Walking Dead Risk is that with an autonomous faction, people have these huge turns that have nothing to do with you. So, like, you could be staring down like a 15-minute turn from somebody else, and you don't even have to pay attention. And it takes me out of the game.
Yeah, I think that's per play session of it. It can change. Like, if they can attack you at any turn if you're in a bordering area.
Mm-hmm.
That just happened to be the way when we played it, how it went. Anyway, so that's my top three. Did you end up coming with a pretty solid list?
Oh yeah, I'll give you my top 23.
Nice.
Okay. No, I'll give you. Okay. First of all, I'm going to go with James Bond from Casino Royale, where they reinvented him into
a real
person. Okay.
Yes.
Because he had gotten so goofy through the Roger Moore years, and even after that, to some extent, that I think that they really needed to go recorrect that.
There was for me. And I saw the movie once a long time ago, so I may be misremembering it, but I remember like a fair amount of Deus Ex Machina, which, you know, isn't odd for a Bond film, but it was like, oh, Bond got out of this because he's lucky.
Oh, in the new ones?
Yeah, in Casino Royale, I haven't seen any of the other ones.
Oh, well, you definitely need to watch the other new ones. But I didn't feel like it was too much like that.
Actually, they followed the book pretty closely in the new Casino Royale. I mean, he got beat up, he bled, he...
Oh, absolutely.
It was deadly, okay? Yeah, he got rescued once because he got poisoned, but, you know, they were able, because they put a monitor in, they were able to monitor him. They knew he was in trouble.
Okay, then maybe you can give me a little bit more insight into this, because I remember in the movie, like, he loses all of the CIA's money.
And, not the CIA. He's British.
He loses all the money they've given him. Absolutely.
But he was liaisoning with the Americans, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, yeah, you're right. Yes, my bad. My bad. Yeah, you're right.
So, and he loses all of their money. And, like, it comes around to, well, we have to give Bond more money because he's a winner, even though he's clearly not.
Well, he had to give him more money because he was at the table. It's who's at the table.
I thought there was an option to bring somebody else in.
No. I don't think the other guy was playing.
The other guy wasn't playing. He was at the table, so he had... They had to money him up to keep him in the game.
Yeah,
they made it sound like, at least to me, that there was an option to take him out and...
Well, they probably just did give up.
And do something else that would have been...
The scene in that where he's lost, though, mm-hmm. where he lost that money and he picks up the knife over at the bar and he's thinking about killing the guy right there and then before they tell him they were going to get more money. I mean, he was going to go across the table and kill the guy.
Yeah.
That's great.
That almost sounds like extortion on his part.
Well, I mean, I don't think they knew that's what he's going
to
do.
No, he was going to do it without them knowing.
Oh, they had tabs on him. Like, huh? James is looking a little stabby. Might want to throw him another 3K.
All right, what's number two?
All right, number two. I'm going to take the Hulk when they turned him into Mr. Fix-It, gave him intelligence and made him a mobster. Now that's going way back in comics.
Yeah.
That was actually a brilliant twist where they brought the Grey Hulk back. You know, he actually had intelligence but still had strength and so on and so forth.
One
brilliant line of comics through there on that.
My hurdle for that has always been the name. I really... Joe Fix-It.
Yeah. that never bothered me, okay?
Okay.
Think in terms of gangsters, they all have names like that.
Yeah. They do.
Jimmy the Horse, you know.
Hey, Jimmy the Horse, why are you always on a horse? Were you a fan? Were you a fan of Paste Pot Pete before he was redesigned into the Trapster?
really, but I knew when that happened, so no.
Okay, because like that's one of the, like that's another one of those odd like Stan Lee-isms where he was really just saying whatever.
he liked to play with words like that.
And, I did.
But I think the interesting thing was they took something and totally changed it. Okay, mm-hmm. so you know they did the same thing. I almost picked Planet Hulk because they did the same thing in Planet Hulk.
Yeah,
where they you know once he's on this planet he has his savagery, but he also has, you know, a higher level of intelligence at the same time.
Well, that was something that I was when I saw Planet Hulk, because I saw the movie rather than reading it. Like he's talking to people and he's sleeping and stuff like that, and I was trying to figure out, okay, is the Hulk, does the Hulk actually have a personality other than rage? And
he does. Well, now yeah. I read the comic. I didn't see any movie on it. I read the comic. But yeah, he does. He does have personality. A lot of Bruce Banner's personality can come across to him.
Mm-hmm.
And on this planet, he had much higher level of that ability, which made him, if you give that kind of savagery, intelligence and strategy, then you can see what he can do. He raises an army.
Yeah, and I recently read all of World War Hulk. And
I've not read that. But
that
yeah.
that is the aftermath. The Hulk finds his way back to Earth.
Well, I know that's the best part of Planet Hulk is when they realize he's gotten back because they know what the reaction is going to be.
Yeah, and the thing is like he's not just going to demolish the Earth. He's looking for the people who are responsible for flinging him out. And like he just savages the X-Mansion.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, stuff like that. They were cutting out his eyes and they weren't able to stop him.
Oh.
And like the whole time he's like talking to them because he's objectively more powerful. And apparently, from what I read, the Hulk's intelligence is in flux. Like he can just get to this point where he's so mad that he really loses it, but he has the capacity to, you know, be this right. warrior-esque strategist, which
goes back to the 80s when they actually, you know, created, you know, the gray and the green Hulk and basically got into this whole psychology thing. Okay. And it all depends on Bruce Banner's psychology at the time as to how much intelligence that he had. It was interesting. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, top of my list. And actually, nice. I've got two here, and both of them came on TV this year. And I wouldn't call them reinventions. I would just call them well done inventions. And you guys may disagree. I think they've done a wonderful job with iZombie, how they brought that to TV.
Yeah.
I also think they've done a great job with Constantine.
Yes, I have not seen Constantine yet, but I do plan on getting caught up because I believe you can get. I think it's on, God damn it. Well, I think it was ABC or whatever channel.
Pirate Bay.
Yeah, whatever. But you can actually stream it on one of these.
They did an excellent job with it.
Yeah. iZombie, though, I have seen. I saw the first episode, but I haven't seen it past that. And
by the way, the first episode's the worst of them all. So
okay.
All you're going to like it going forward.
Awesome. You know, see, and I watched it because my wife really likes the comic. And she really wanted to see how they were going to adapt it to TV. And I'm glad it gets better because she had mixed feelings about it. It looked like they knew what they were going for and they're going in a certain direction that actually looked really good.
And they do well. I mean, the stories get a lot more interesting after the first one. But I also just love the way that every time you break away, it's kind of like the old Wild Wild West thing. Every time you break away and come back to this, it's a comic book frame.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a good touch.
I haven't seen it, so I just have a general DC question because Constantine is one of my big DC blind spots. What is his connection to Swamp Thing? Why are those two characters so important to each other?
That I can't answer.
Okay, because it's brought up like a few times, and like it seems to be like if there's a Swamp Thing going on, there's a Constantine thing going on.
I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe it may be coincidental.
It may be.
It may be that he originated out of Swamp Thing.
Well, I thought. Oh, you mean Constantine originated out? I don't.
Out of the comic,
maybe. Maybe they introduced him there.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean,
beyond that, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably one of those things, a marriage they kind of created just to probably bring up the popularity of both of those, maybe. But Constantine, I like the story. I like the movie that they did was not too bad, but from what I understand, especially from, I believe it was a guest we had on this show, Ella 2 really loves that show. And she loves that they kind of stayed true to who he was.
I think it's much better than the movie person. So.
Cool. Yeah. I look forward to it.
Yeah, I'll check it out if it's good enough for Lanius.
Yeah, absolutely.
We need that on the show.
Yeah.
So those are mine.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for being on the show. We really loved you. Really loved having you here. Don't forget, everybody at home, that Rick is going to be at Comic Palooza. He's going to be doing panels, hosting games, and playing games. So you might get a chance to cast the die in some Elder Sign with him. Also, don't forget about our giveaways. We have a link to a description on exactly how to get into that particular
contest
sweepstakes. Pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
In our links below. So don't forget to check that out. And we'll see you all at Comic Palooza. And now hey, I think it's. What's up?
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I look forward to meeting you guys out there next month.
Sounds great.
Absolutely.
And now I think it's time to say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Now, Richard.
Yes.
Where did you say that you got this potion from?
Listen, I got it from Mego, which obviously is an alien race, and they use it to keep brains alive, but that's all they use it for, so I can't guarantee what it's going to do exactly here.
I feel funny.
Yeah, hey, the Amiga guys, they don't have anything to do with the Elder Gods, do they?
Well, they do. Oh, wait, what's that? I see a swirl of light. I think that one's going to take me back to Arkham, so guess what? This is your problem. I'll see you later.
Rick, I have so many more questions!
Oh, God.
This isn't good.
I don't know if in preparation for this you followed any of our podcasts.
I have not.